is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. This January, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball introduced their all-new CT Plus machine with a 21.5-inch touchscreen that allows players to train offline, build custom drills, compete in multiplayer mode, and view their stats in real time. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on their Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Peter Lonigan, Basketball Australia's Head of High Performance Coach Development, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. Jumping on to talk some NBA after another disappointing Cavs loss tonight.
Hey, my prediction was right, Mike. I said we were going to go 2-2. Didn't know which games we were going to win. Didn't know which games we were going to lose. Once again, you went with the 3-1 prediction. It let you down, Mike.
I'm trying to be optimistic, but it's not happening. Listen,
the start of this game tonight, I mean, I know you didn't watch it because you were at your son's game, but, I mean, they looked great to start. They got off to a great start. I think they were up like 17-6, and they were firing on all cylinders. And then all of a sudden, they just didn't do well. And we can't blame Kevin Love tonight, Mike. Kevin Love
did not play tonight.
Listen, I will give him this much credit though. He was up cheering the team on, like talking and doing stuff. So like it wasn't like he was like resigned to the fact of oh man, I'm now benched. And to be honest with you, God, I'm so torn, Mike, but Caris LeVert on the defensive end of the floor, I don't mind him, except for when he whacks players who are shooting threes, but his intensity is good. But man, every time, my favorite moment of the night was, John Michael was talking, oh, Caris LeVert's been playing great on the offense, been not turning the ball over, and then like immediately after he said it, he dribbled it off of his leg and it went to the other team. Like that just is a microcosm of how I feel about Caris LeVert. I don't know. I mean, I know he scored a lot of points tonight, but man, does he scare me when he has the basketball in his hands. And I don't know. There was some bad mismanagement again in the fourth quarter. But here's what I'll say. The Heat are playing back to what the level of basketball that they were supposed to play. I know we should have won that game tonight. I feel like we should have won the game. But they've been playing better. So I'm not like completely defeated that they lost the game tonight. There's something missing, Mike. There's something missing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just think this team hasn't really – look, they killed the Clippers without Kawhi and Paul George. I don't feel like they've had a really good win in a while.
What was the other win they had this last week? It was a blowout. They blew out the Rockets.
The Rockets,
yeah, they blew them out, though. Listen,
the Rockets are the worst team in the league.
Are they worse than Detroit?
Yeah, they're the worst, man.
Okay. Well,
I can't give them any credit. When's the last time we beat a good team? In a real game with our real players,
the Bucks,
maybe, no Middleton.
Yeah, but Giannis played. Yeah, come on.
I don't know. I don't know, man. This team right now is like, I don't know. They are scuffling big time. I don't know. I don't feel like they've had a really good win, and it's been a long time since I feel like they beat
the Pelicans.
No Zion, no Ingram. Portland at Portland, maybe. At Portland. Maybe that's a good win, but Portland's below 500. The two Phoenix wins. Phoenix was completely decimated. Chicago stinks.
The Lakers?
I mean, really, I'm going back. Like, I'm trying to find. I guess the two Milwaukee wins, right? Giannis sat out the first one in December, right? He sat that one out, I think.
No, which one?
The one way back in December?
No, I went to that game. He played.
Okay. Well, all right. So I guess that's a good win. But Utah, Dallas, Luka sat out. Indiana,
Indiana's 1-9 in their last 10.
Yeah, I mean,
they're playing bad.
I don't know. I mean, maybe the Lakers game.
Listen, Mike, I know we talked about it last week. The Lakers, I'm telling you, something's brewing over there. They're like Rui Hachimura, baby. Keep bringing the thunder.
Come on, man.
Did you see LeBron's stat line tonight?
Yeah, I know he had a triple-double.
First player to ever do that in their 20th season in the NBA. Which, I mean, how many players play in their 20th season, first of all? Fourth all-time in career assists. And he's the first player in NBA. He's 89 points from the all-time scoring record.
Look, I'm not going to argue with the fact that the guy's incredible, right? The career is unassailable.
Anthony Davis looks hurt, by the way, again. I don't know if you caught any of the highlights, but he was hobbling around a little bit. So get ready for the Anthony Davis is out for a week or two situation again. I mean,
oh, there you go.
I think the Lakers are going to sneak in to like the play-in game, Mike. I think they're going to sneak in this time. I think they're going to do it.
Look, they very well could. The Western Conference, it's ridiculous right now. The Clippers are in fourth, and
Kawhi plays every other game.
Yeah, they don't barely play. Golden State's 7-18 on the road. They're in fifth. Dallas has been terrible lately. They're still hanging on. Phoenix has clawed their way back. New Orleans went from second in the conference to eighth. Minnesota, who everybody gave up for dead, is currently in ninth. You go from, even if you include Sacramento, if you don't include Sacramento, you go from the Clippers to the Lakers in 13th place, and they're separated by four games. And really, I guess the Lakers have lost three more games than the Clippers, and they're that far away in the standing. So is it out of the realm of possibility that the Lakers could get into the top six? I mean, I don't think so.
No, baby, let's go. I like your talking. I like what I'm hearing.
I don't think it's going to happen. There's a lot of teams for them to leapfrog, but it could.
Yeah, maybe if the officials didn't referee them terribly.
All right, are we talking about that now?
I mean, I know we're jumping around a lot here. Let's put a ball on the Cavs. Let's predict the Cavs rest of their week.
All right. Well, they have an easy schedule coming up.
Yeah. Well, not Thursday.
So 2-2.
Thursday they play Memphis at home on TNT, national TV game. If you're going to get hyped for a game, Cavaliers, a national TV game. This will only be the second one all year. I think it's a loss, though. I'm going to say it's a loss. Agree? Disagree? We almost beat Memphis without Donovan last time, but
I'll be pessimistic. I'm going optimistic. I'm going to go pessimistic. So they lose to Memphis, then you're at Indiana. You got to win that game.
Then
you're
at Washington. You got to win that game. All right, that gets us to our next podcast. We're not going to podcast after a Cavs game next week, Mike.
All right, 2-1.
This will be the week we go 3-0. 2-1. I agree with 2-1. And then things once again look good for the Cavs going into the All-Star break after that. So we'll see. We'll have to see. There's only when you look at the rest of the schedule before the All-Star break, there's like two games that we
should. Worst case scenario, you should go 6-2. Absolute worst case scenario.
Pelicans?
If you're a real team, you got to go 6-2.
Over these last eight?
Yeah.
5-3, you wouldn't take 5-3?
No. No.
So you're saying that we lose one this week and then we lose one the following week.
If you lose to Memphis and then you lose at Philly the last game before the All-Star break.
You're not afraid of Pelicans then at all.
Still no Zion. They've still been
in New Orleans.
They've been bad. New Orleans has been bad. I'm not saying that that's a game that they couldn't lose, but if you're a real team and the other team's without their best player, that's a game you should win. It's not a back-to-back. It's the first night of the second night they're in Chicago, or they're home. They're back home for Chicago, so it's a home game. I don't know. I think you should win at New Orleans when you're not coming off a back-to-back and Zion's not there. You got to win that game.
Okay. All right. Before we move off of this, I do have the win shares for the Miami Heat pulled up.
Okay. All right. Alonzo Mourning.
Number 3.
Dwayne Wade.
Number 1.
Udonis Haslem.
Number 4.
Jimmy Butler.
Number 11.
All right, I guess.
Come on.
You're not. What do you mean, come on?
Come on, man.
I'm missing somebody?
Very blatant.
Come on, man. LeBron?
Number 2.
Really? Number 2?
Number 2.
Having only been there for 4 years?
Number 2.
Wow. That's kind of surprising. Based on some of the other results, I would have thought that he maybe didn't qualify long enough.
Oh, yeah.
So let me think.
The guy you're missing. Shaq. No, Shaq's not even in the top 12.
Really? Okay. Shane Battier.
Not in the top 12.
Okay. So am I pre-Heatles, post-Heatles, or Heatles?
Let me see here. Hold on. I think this guy was a pre-Heatles. I think he was on the first championship team with Wade. I'm gonna pull this up and make sure. Verify. He was on that team, but it was his second stint with that team.
Glenn Rice?
Nope.
Glenn Rice on the list?
Hold on. I have to jump. Glenn Rice is number 9.
Let me think. Who am I missing from that era?
It's a guy that I kind of forgot that existed, to be honest with you. I always enjoyed really watching him shoot threes.
Mike Miller?
His nickname was Steady Eddie.
Eddie House?
Nope. His Eddie last Jones? Name is also the name of a chicken establishment. Yep. Yeah, it is. Eddie Jones is number 5, Mike.
Wow. Interesting. Wow. I don't even know if I...
Chris
I guess
Bosh
I,
is 6.
I guess Bosh should have been my guess. Yeah, Bosh should have been the guess.
6 was Bosh. Tim Hardaway was 7. Bam is 8. Glenn Rice is 9. Hassan Whiteside, 10. Ahead of Shaq.
Yeah. All right.
Jimmy Butler, 11, and then a guy I've never heard of, number 12. He wears goggles like Horace Grant. His first name is Grant. Grant Long.
Grant Long, Eastern Michigan guy. He's a Mac guy.
I don't know that guy. I don't know him.
Grant Long. That's my era. A little bit younger than me, but he was an Eastern Michigan Mac guy, so... All right, Miami Heat. There's always some ones that are interesting. It feels like – it doesn't feel like even though I know obviously the Heat had a ton of success in the 4 years that LeBron was there, it still feels like in a lot of other cases that four years hasn't been enough to get guys near the top.
I think that shows you how good he was in those 4 years, because remember, win shares are based on like –
their performance when they played with those teams. Like,
right, I get it. But then it feels like Butler should be higher too. But then again, Butler doesn't play a lot of games. He's injured a lot and has missed a lot of regular season games. But it feels like for Butler to be 11 and LeBron to be 2 doesn't necessarily make sense to me. But I can't claim to fully understand the win shares concept. So anyway, I didn't do too bad. I didn't do too bad on that one. I got 4 out of 5 pretty easily.
Yeah. I'm impressed, Mike. Good job. I figured that you were going to just guess Udonis Haslem just for the fact that he's been there for, like, since I was 5 or something like
that. Right. It seems like he has to have contributed something.
Take a guess. What year did Udonis Haslem start in the NBA?
Well, let's see. He's like 42, maybe 42 years old, and he probably played 3 years of college. So go back to probably, I'm going to say 2000.
No. 2003.
You
are right. Okay. He is 42, but okay. He played in 2002 to 2003. He played in a France pro league.
Oh, okay. All right.
And how many games in the last 5 years did you have Udonis Haslem played?
In 5 years, how many games has he actually gotten into?
Yes.
I'm going to say 36.
Well, that was a quicker guess than I was anticipating. Hold on.
Sorry.
33, Mike. Pretty good.
All right. Not bad. All right. That's not bad.
In the 2 years prior to that combined, in the year before that, he played 16. So if we went even further back. So there you go. Okay. Right. There's Udonis Haslem information for you. All right. So I guess we'll transition to the Lakers now. Listen, I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here. Again, because we talked about this last week with the whole ridiculous 3-year-old response, or the third grade response, the way those kids are acting. And I defended LeBron this week to a lot of people because they said he overreacted. He was acting like a baby but I don't know how a referee does not see that foul. I just don't know how. And maybe he shouldn't have reacted like that.
But maybe.
He probably shouldn't have reacted like that. But honestly,
which was more offensive to you, the third graders or LeBron?
The third graders.
I don't know about that.
Here's the deal, Mike. Do you disagree?
In any other context of basketball, anywhere in the world, at any level. Anything even like, I mean, that's an unprecedented temper tantrum. Have you ever seen anything even remotely close to that?
I would say that the Malice in the Palace is probably worse, but maybe that's just me.
But that's not reacting to a, I mean, I'm not saying that what he did was criminal, but it was completely ridiculous and immature.
Was that worse or Patrick Beverly getting the camera?
Patrick Beverly getting the camera is a clown. That's just a clown move. I mean, there's no, but I just like LeBron, what are you doing? Like calls get missed. I know that that was a big call and I know that it, more than likely cost him the game.
Here's my big piece, Mike. The foul on the other end of the floor that they called like literally 10 seconds before that was not nearly as blatant as the foul on LeBron.
Right, but you can go through hundreds, thousands of NBA games, college games, high school games where there's a call at one end that doesn't get called. And then there's a call at the other end that does get called, or vice versa. And one seems completely egregious that doesn't get called. And then at the other end, it's a ticky-tack foul that does get called. And look, that's part of the game. I'm no fan of officials blowing calls. And clearly that was a blown call, right? I mean, it was a foul. There's no question about it. And
did you see the post from the NBA officials?
Yeah.
the sleepless nights. Come on now. Come on. Yeah.
I mean, that's
give you a break. Again,
it's all. I mean, that's ridiculous. That tweet was completely ridiculous. But on the level of ridiculousness, I don't know which one I would. I mean, there's three ridiculous things with the LeBron reaction, the Beverly camera, and then the apology tweet from the NBA officials. I don't see how you can let that go if you're a ref and watch the guy dancing around the court and getting down on all fours and, you know, hands on his head and just going at it for what, 20 seconds, 30 seconds of, I mean, I don't know. Like, if you do that in any other level of basketball anywhere, it's clearly a technical, and he may not have been using bad language or whatever, but how many times do you hear officials say something to the effect of, well, we can't let guys show us up? I mean, I don't know if you could show up a group of officials any more than that. Look, I get it. Like, clearly, that lack of a call, LeBron goes to the line with no time left on the clock, and he's probably going to make at least one, and they're going to win. But he won't be the first person that gets cheated out of a game by an official. And it happens, man. And for somebody who's been around as long as he has to react to that, I don't know if you listened to Zach Lowe, but they were talking about today that the Lakers were so upset and that they felt like, well, maybe LeBron was taking it as, or the team was taking it that these games are all so important to the Lakers that it was just this, not only the reaction to that call, but just the fact that this was another game that they could have won and put in the win column in their quest to make it into the playoffs. But then Zach was saying something to the effect of, well, if it's each game is so critically important, then why are you sitting LeBron and AD against Brooklyn? Like, you can't have it both ways. I don't know. To me, I could do without all the shenanigans after the play. Bad call. Clearly, the call should have gone in LeBron's favor there. He clearly got fouled, goes to the line, probably makes him, and the Lakers win. But I'm sorry, you can't be dancing around and on all fours on the court and have your head in your hands and be running around like a maniac. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's not a good look, at least in my opinion. I just don't think it's a good look.
My thing is, I think that was just a boil. I honestly think that was his reaction, but I also think it's a boil over because he's so frustrated with everything that's going on. And I'm not excusing it, okay? I just don't think it was as blown up. I don't think it was as, like, big.
Right, but shouldn't he get a T? I mean, you can't let the guy run around on the court and do all the things that he did and not tee him up. You just can't. I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm sure Jordan said things that didn't get him teed up because he was Jordan, right?
Right, but he didn't run around the court for 20 seconds and lay on the ground.
You're right. I guess you're right.
I mean, say what you want. Say it, whisper in a guy's ear, whatever, and then the ref can decide whether they're going to take it or not. But, like, to do all that, all the drama of running around and this and that, whatever, like, okay, they blew the call. It's happened before in games. Guys have blown calls before. I've never, ever, ever seen anyone react like that. I don't see how you let him get away with it and not tee him up.
Probably because he's LeBron. I don't know.
Maybe.
All right, so my next question, Mike, how do we fix this?
How do we fix the officiating?
Yeah, how do we fix
it? You don't. You don't, right?
So here's my question. Do we go back to the review stuff in the last 2 minutes?
Where things are automatically reviewed?
Yes. Do we go back to that? I mean, I almost think...
Here's what I'll say. No. And you know why? Because you think back to the finals, right? When there was the first game, game one of the... Was it the 2017 finals, right? Where there was the call that LeBron got called for the charge against Durant. And they went back and they reviewed it. And at least in my opinion, they got that call wrong. And it went in Golden State's favor. So the fact that you can't count on, even when they go to replay, that they're going to get it right. If you look back in the history of sports, like blown calls and things are, I'm not saying it's great, and obviously you want to eliminate as much of that as you can, but the fact is the game is played by human beings. Refereeing is really hard. It's being reffed by human beings, and there's going to be mistakes. You could go back and you could look at a million plays during any game.
Or you could go back and look at the Bengals-Chiefs game.
Right. Like the number of, if you went through after the Bengals-Chiefs game, great point. You go back through the Twitter feed after the Bengals-Chiefs game and the number of people that were posting, well, what about this late hit? And what about this holding on Mahomes' last run? And what about this play? And they're all right. Like you could look at it and say on every play, you could call X, Y, or Z. And you could look at it in a basketball game, the number of calls that are called incorrectly or calls that could go either way or calls that they don't call at all where you think it should have been something. Like you're never going to have perfect officiating. And so to say, how are we going to fix it? I think all you're trying to do is you're just going to continually try to train officials better and continue to work and have them improve their craft. But you can't expect any official to have 100% accuracy in their job. It's just not realistic. I don't care what profession you're in or whatever you do. Nobody is 100% perfect. And even if you were 100% perfect, there'd be somebody who disagreed with the way that you did it. Somebody else would have said, I would have done it differently. And so I just don't think you could fix it. I think look, replay's fine. I don't care what iteration of it you take. You want to go back to the way it was previously. You want to have the challenge situation the way it is now.
Do you think they should change it to if they challenge it and they win the challenge, they should get their challenge back? Because I think they do. I think that's the change they should make. Personally.
I think that would be a good change. I mean, I think because otherwise you're put in a position where it could be a big play with 3 minutes to go where there's something completely egregious that you know you're going to win that challenge. But then maybe there's something that happens again that now you can't go back and look at it. So, yeah, I think if you win.
Or what I see a lot is there's something so badly called in the first quarter of the game, and the officials, the coaches aren't going to use their challenge in that first quarter because they know if they challenge, and they can't challenge the rest of the game.
Correct.
Maybe you go to, you get one challenge per half. Like, maybe that's a thing. I don't think you want to go to one per quarter, but if you go to one per half, kind of like the football, The NFL used to have two challenges. Was the NFL the originally, was it a challenge a half or something? I seem to recall that.
I don't remember.
It was something where it's like maybe you go to one challenge per half. That way that encourages coaches to challenge in the first half once and challenge in the second half once. I mean, there's been times that JB is not challenged that I get really frustrated. And it's probably they're looking at analytics and when they should challenge and what's a good time to challenge. So maybe allowing teams to have a challenge in each half, maybe that's a solution. I don't know.
I'm okay with that. To be honest, I really don't care. Like I said, to me, you could eliminate completely instant replay. I'd be totally fine with that. You could put in where the coaches get three challenges a half. I'd be completely fine with that. To me, I don't think you're ever going to get it 100% perfectly right. It doesn't matter. Even with instant replay, look at the Devontae Smith catch, right, in the Eagles 49ers game.
Well, and that was crazy to me because they have that eye in the sky thing. They're supposed to be looking at those plays. How does New York not realize that?
But that's what I'm saying. There's still a human element to this whole thing that you're just never going to be able to make it perfect. And the game moves too fast, the guys are too big, and the calls are too subjective. And so depending on which team you're a fan of, you're going to have a perspective that's slightly different. Now, obviously, in the LeBron case, there's nobody that could argue coherently that that's not a foul, but it happens. Anybody who's played basketball, it's happened where you've taken a shot and you've gotten fouled and it hasn't been called. Whether you're playing in fifth grade or you're playing in middle school, or you're playing in high school, or you're playing in college, or you're playing in the NBA, it happens all the time. And that's just the reality of it. And you're never going to completely get rid of that in the game. You're just going to keep trying to train the officials and make them better and better and better. And are referees perfect? No. But thank goodness there are people out there that want a referee, because I know I certainly don't want to. And to be honest, I have a hard time sometimes wondering why would anybody want to do this job? But thankfully, there are people out there that want to do it. So I don't care what the system is as far as instant replay goes. Like I said, I'd be fine if they got rid of it. I'd be fine if they tweaked it. It doesn't really matter to me, because you're never going to get it 100% perfect. Because even when you review things, there's still people that disagree. Even when you're looking at the instant replay of what's happening, I don't care whether that's basketball, football, baseball, whatever. It's just, it's always going to be imperfect. So you have to learn to live with it. And as a player, it's the same thing that I would tell any kid who I've ever coached. Your job's not to referee, your job's to play. And if you don't like the call, just keep your mouth closed and go on and keep playing your hardest. And that's the same advice I'd give LeBron. I don't want to see a guy rolling around on the floor for 20 seconds after a blown call, because everybody's gotten fouled and not had it called. So LeBron certainly has had it happen to him in the course of his 20 years in the NBA. So just get over it.
Okay.
Get over it.
Fair. So I know last week when we were recording, we saw Luka went out with an injury, and we talked about it briefly, but he apparently is okay, Mike.
Came back with, 53 and a triple-double?
Yeah, so, okay, so Luka Doncic recorded his fifth career 50-point game, tied for second most among players before their 24th birthday, with LeBron James and Will Chamberlain. Who is the only player to have seven 50-point games before their 24th birthday?
Seven 50-point games before their 24th birthday?
Yeah.
Wilt?
No, Wilt's tied with him. He had five.
Oh, Wilt had five?
Five. LeBron, Wilt had five.
Okay.
This player had seven. And it's not someone that I would have expected. He is old school.
Seven before Oscar Robertson?
He may have shot free throws in a different way.
Rick Barry.
There you go.
Okay, interesting. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I mean, that's a pretty good record. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty interesting.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you finish yours, because this my point will take us in a different direction.
Luka Doncic recorded his fifth career 50-point game. In the last 50 years, Michael Jordan and LeBron James are the only players that have had that many 50-point games in their first five seasons. LeBron and Luka in their first five seasons had five. How many do you think Jordan had 50-point games in his first five seasons?
50-point games in his first five seasons. They each had five. I'm going to say – you know what? It's funny because – you think about all the points that Jordan scored. I'm going to say I'll go with eight.
More than double that.
20?
Less.
18.
Oh, you're so close.
19.
No, the other way.
17.
There you go. All right. 17. So we had 17.
All right.
There you go.
I mean, you go with scoring and your odds are pretty good if you go with Wilt or Jordan when it comes to those things. The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast, and Joe Stecision from Unleashed Potential, will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions, led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered. Did you happen to read the article on The Ringer today about the records by Zach Cram? Did you happen to read this article?
Mike, I don't have time to read, my man.
All right. Okay, so basically what he was talking about is the fact that LeBron is obviously going to break Kareem's record. And so when you think about sort of box score stats, the fact that it's pretty unlikely that any of these other records beyond points that they're ever going to be broken. So rebounds, Will Chamberlain has 23,924. Second place is Bill Russell, 21,620. And so that's an 11% difference. And basically nobody who's active right now is even halfway to Will Chamberlain's mark. And basically because, again, back in the day, guys missed a lot more shots than they miss today. So that record basically is unassailable. And then you have Hakeem, block shots, 3,830. And the difference there is 16%. Stockton, 3,265 steals. Jason Kidd is 2,684, so he's 22% behind. And Stockton has 15,806 assists. Kidd has 12,091, 31% behind. And then he just kind of went through and talked about how...
How many assists does LeBron have now?
I don't know. That's a good question.
How high up in the list? Can you get...
LeBron's going to be like fourth, I think, all-time
right
assists.
He's fourth now.
Yeah, I don't know what his number is,
I'm going to pull it up right now.
I mean, it's nowhere close to, getting to where Stockton is.
Well, I'm not thinking Stockton. I'm thinking can he be number three? Chris Paul's number three. What's Chris Paul at? Hold on. Can LeBron pass Chris Paul? I mean, I can't bet that Chris Paul is going to be in the league more than another year or two, right?
Yeah.
Oh, come
Probably
on. Okay, so LeBron's like 1,000 behind Chris Paul. I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. So it's just basically the gist of the article was that these statistical, all these counting stats, points is the one that I guess theoretically is the easiest to break. So here's just a couple of different things. So with the rebounding, it says this century, the highest single rebounding total in this century was in 2017-2018 by Andre Drummond, 1,247 rebounds. If a newly drafted player replicated that season 19 times in a row, he'd still fall short of Wilt's record. All right, blocks. Now, clearly it doesn't include Wilt and Bill Russell because they didn't keep statistics. But, okay, so let me read exactly what I got to figure
out. I'm looking at blocks right now on the NBA.com. Do you know who's number 50 in all-time blocks?
LeBron.
Big Z, baby.
All right, there you go.
That would have been a... Samuel Dallenberg is in the top 35.
There you go. Okay, so here's Olajuwon. To catch Olajuwon, a would-be swatter would need to average more than 200 blocks per season for 19 years. But nobody has reached 200 blocks in any single season since Rudy Gobert in 2016-2017. Olajuwon, for context, exceeded 200 in each of his first 12 seasons of his career, peaking at a mind-boggling 376 blocks. All right, so that's blocks. Steals. So this was another good one here. Let me get to the point where it talks about where am I at here? So Chris Paul is 769 total steals away from the record. If he repeats his previous 6.5 seasons over the next 6.5 seasons all the way through his age 43 campaign, he still wouldn't make up the gap of how far he is behind John Stockton because Paul is currently the active leader in steals. And do you know who the top 30, the steals leader for players under 30 is? You'll never get this in a bazillion years. It's somebody we've already talked about on the podcast.
Tonight. Top 30, under 30.
The top, this guy's under 30 years old with the most steals.
Someone we talked about in the podcast.
Yeah, you'll never get it.
Wait, hold on. It's not from the Cavs, right?
It's nobody from the, well, this guy did play for the Cavs.
Oh.
At one point, he did play for the Cavaliers.
Like a hot second or?
Hot second.
In the LeBron years?
No, after the LeBron years.
Kyrie. No way it's Kyrie.
No, it's not Kyrie.
We didn't talk about him tonight. After LeBron.
This guy was mentioned in our most immediate segment. He was mentioned in this segment. He also was mentioned as being near the top in rebounding for something.
I'm having a brain fart. Who are you talking about?
Andre Drummond.
No way. God,
998 career steals.
How does he have that many steals?
Andre Drummond, baby. Andre Drummond.
That's crazy. That's some good pull right there, Mike. That's a really good article.
It's a really good article. It's super interesting. So, and then assists. So let me figure out the correct. Okay. Out of the 9 1,000 assist seasons in NBA history, Stockton has 7 of them. Nobody has reached that threshold even once since Stockton did it in 1994-95. So, and then, this is a good one. We could add up the assist totals for the last 19 season leaders. In other words, Trae Young's 21-22 season, Russell Westbrook's 2021 season, and so on, all the way back through Stephon Marbury's 03-04 assist title, and still you wouldn't reach Stockton's career total.
Wow.
So basically you take the league leader every year for 19 years, and you still wouldn't get it. It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy. So all those, it's a really interesting article.
It's a good one. I like it. Hey, Mike. And again,
kudos to LeBron. Just incredible what he's doing
LeBron has the record for the most turnovers in a career. Okay, which, I mean, given the amount of minutes and everything, it's not really that surprising, right? I mean, okay,
right.
How much he has the ball. Karl Malone is 2. Do you know who number 3 is?
Number 3 in career turnovers. So you have LeBron. You said Karl Malone?
Yep.
Another guy who has the ball a lot. I'm going to say Magic?
Nope. It's someone who's currently in the league.
Currently, Chris Paul?
Nope. Someone who's currently on LeBron's team.
Currently on LeBron's team. Oh, Russell Westbrook.
Oh, God. He's played 400 less games than LeBron.
Yeah, I should have known that one.
He's only 400 turnovers.
Well, when you have the ball, I mean, the usage rate that he had for those couple of years, and yeah, I mean, makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
James Harden's number 10.
With a bullet, baby.
975. Anyways, all right.
He still looks kind of chunky to me, by the way. I keep hearing people saying that, oh, he's in such great shape. I'm not sure I'm buying that. He looked a little chunky in that Denver game.
Well, the Sixers are looking good, man.
Yeah, Embiid was great, although they blew that game. They lost to Orlando last night, so kind of didn't double down. That, to me, was a Cavs. That was a very Cavsy loss. You win a big game against
Denver. Was it a Cavsy loss, a Cavsy loss,
however you want to say it. But you beat a team, big game, Embiid going after the Joker for the MVP, puts up 47. Boom, you turn around the next day and totally squander that big win and lose to Orlando. I guess I get it over the course of 82 games. It's hard to get up for every game, and every team in the NBA is talented and can beat you on any given night, but it just feels like you'd want to consolidate that win. You'd want to take that Denver win and be like, okay, now we got that one. Let's put this next one, which theoretically is an easier opponent, let's put that one in our pocket. And I guess you're only really watching your team that closely, so it probably happens to everybody all the time, but I feel like that's something that the Cavs do. You win a game that you really want to win, bigger game, and then boom, you turn around and you lose to a team that you shouldn't lose to. Embiid was spectacular against the Nuggets. Did you watch any of that game?
No, that was Saturday afternoon. Let's see, what was I doing Saturday afternoon? Oh no, I was at the was at I was in between
I had practice, and I had I went to the Olmsted Falls game, so I was with my family. We went bowling, Mike. We were bowling.
Nice. There you go. Well, Embiid looked really good. He was down.
First time I had bowled in 6 years, and I bowled at 127.
127, that's pretty good.
For the first time in 6 years, I'll take it.
That is. That's pretty good. I couldn't tell you what I normally bowl. Somewhere in the low hundreds, I'd say, is a pretty good estimate. Bowling's kind of like golf for me. I'm good for about three or four frames, and then I'm done. Just like in golf, I'm good for like three or four holes, and then I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah.
Pool is the same way for me. I can play like one game of pool and be semi-functional, and then after that, I lose my focus.
Yeah, I don't really play pool very often.
Yeah, no, I don't either. But yeah, Embiid was great against Denver. Scored in such a variety of different ways. Like during that game, there's a time when you're watching it going, my God, how does anybody stop this guy? I mean, he's so good. He's so big. He's got such good footwork. And when he's shooting the ball really well, I mean, he's a load to deal with. And just it comes down to, right, what we've talked about for years and years and years. Can you trust him? Can you trust him to stay healthy for 2 months of a playoff run? And I think my answer to that would still be no. And that's besides the fact that he's paired up with the most unreliable playoff performer maybe in NBA history. So congratulations, Philly, on your recent hot streak, but I'm not putting any stock in any postseason success for the Sixers. I'd be more than happy to match up against the Philadelphia 76ers in the playoffs. Let's put it that way.
Sign you up.
Cavs Sixers first round, I'd be okay with that.
Okay.
I think of all the teams, I'd most like to play Philly. I think out of all those teams.
Philly?
Out of the current top six, unless you can get me to New York, Atlanta, Washington, Indiana, one of those teams, I think of those other five, I think if I had to pick one team to match up with, I think I'd take Philly.
Okay. Sure. Sign me up. Whatever. Listen, I'd love it just because it would give us a nice little test right out the gate. Like,
right.
Can we stop Fat Boy James Harden? Can we stop?
See, I stopped short of calling him Fat Boy. I said he looked a little chunky.
Well, listen, he's going to probably wear some extra padding to make it look like he's not in shape, and then he's going to show up and he's going to be ripped, Mike. What do you think?
No, I just don't know how I just don't know how anybody's a fan of that guy. I just don't know. Like, who are his fans? Come on.
I'm going to keep my mouth shut because I know some of my students are listening.
I just don't get it, man. I don't know how you could be a fan of James Harden. I guess if he plays for your team, fine. But, man, as a neutral observer, how can you like that guy? Ugh. No thanks. Anything in the West that we want to hit on? It's just chaos is, to me, the biggest thing.
I have not been following as much as I'd like this week. It's been a pretty busy week. So if I'm being completely honest with you, what I said is what I had written down from my big takeaway. So if there's anything that you have, Mike, I'm happy to discuss it with you. But I'm pretty much out of things to talk about.
All right. Well, there you have it. So I think what's interesting to me is the West clearly. You have all these teams that are bunched together, like we talked about earlier, where the difference between the Clippers and the Lakers from spot 4 to spot 13, there's three difference in the loss column. And then you have basically there are 4 games separating those, whatever, 9 spots or 10 spots, whatever it is. So all those teams are bunched together. The first 12 teams in the Western Conference all currently right now have a positive point differential, which is kind of crazy. The Clippers at spot 4 have a plus 0.1 point differential. So they're all barely positive. Whereas you go over to the East and it's only the top 7, and then way down at the bottom, Toronto must have a couple of blowouts in there because they're in 12th and they have a positive point differential. But the West is just a mess. You could tell me at this point any of these teams could end up in the top 6 and any of these teams could fall out and I would believe you because they're just – I don't think there's a whole lot of difference between any of them. It feels like none of them have really hit their footing, and I don't know what's going to happen with which team stay in the top six. Like you said earlier, the Clippers in four, and still Kawhi only plays occasionally, and Paul George is still kind of in and out. The Warriors, who knows what's going to go on with them, and the Mavericks are talking all kinds of trades. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Anything on the trade front that you want to hit on, or we just save that for next week?
I think we save that for next week, because next week will be really, like, I think we'll have a clearer picture. I know that I saw that they were the Buck, or who was the Bucks were offering, were having discussions to get Jay Crowder, but like
George Hill and Grayson Allen and second round pick or something.
Does that make them better? Does Jay Crowder for Grayson Allen and George Hill make the Bucks better? I don't think it does.
I don't know. I'm not a huge Jay Crowder guy. Theoretical Jay Crowder, I guess, if you go back to their championship year, you say he's sort of their PJ Tucker, maybe a slight offensive upgrade and a slight defensive downgrade. And that's the role that they're looking to fill. I don't know. I mean, I'm just not a big Jay Crowder guy. I don't think a whole lot of him. I don't think he's a difference maker, but there's going to be teams that want him. My question is, why would you give up anything for a guy that hasn't played the whole season?
Ask the Browns.
There you go. slightly different story, but if you're Phoenix, like, I don't know what you think you're getting for Crowder, and where does Crowder even want to, like, why doesn't he want to play for Phoenix? Where does he want to go? Who knows what this, I mean, I guess you'd have to do some serious legwork and deciding whether or not you're going to bring him in. I don't know. To me, he's not a guy that makes a difference. Conversely, if the Raptors decide they're going to start trading some guys, I think some of their guys could be a guy that make a difference. Although the things that you're hearing about Ananobi, that he's going to get two or three first round picks for a guy who tops out as a really good 3-and-D player and maybe a high quality, maybe he's your fourth guy on a championship team. Seems like a pretty high price to pay, but I don't know. I guess we'll see if he ends up getting traded or if the Raptors end up doing anything. I think the problem is just that when you look at it, you have all these teams that really still kind of want to be in the race and don't want to tank, and would probably like to add to their team, yeah, as opposed to teams that are trading. Like, if you look at the Western Conference, Utah is the only team that's probably really in contention that would be looking to get rid of guys. I mean, I don't think Oklahoma City is going to trade anybody to get worse. I don't think Portland will. I don't think the Lakers will. The Rockets have all young guys, so they don't really have anything to trade. I guess the Spurs have Poeltl and McDermott, and maybe a couple veterans that a team would like. So you really only have maybe two, three sellers at the most in the West. And then in the East, who's selling in the East? Washington's currently in the play-in. They seem like they want to keep competing. I guess the Bulls and the Raptors are the two teams that might be able to shake things up. Charlotte probably would be okay with trading Plumlee or Terry Rozier, or there's a lot of PJ Washington talk. Detroit's not trading anybody except Bogdanovich, and it seems like they want a pretty high price for him. So there's just not a lot of sellers, and there's a lot of teams that could use an extra guy here or there.
This brings up the whole theoretical, you know, whatchamacallit, the theoretical play-in game has kind of watered down the trade market, right? Like, because of the fact that now there's these teams that,
you know, there's definitely more teams that are alive, right?
Yeah. So now there's these teams that are alive. They're less likely to make trades because there's all these more teams that are in contention, right? Agree? Disagree?
No, I agree. You wonder, is that the right move? Is it the right move for the Pacers to continue to try to chase for that spot. They obviously signed Miles Turner to the extension, whatever, 2 years, $60 million, which kind of, it doesn't take him off the market because they could still trade him, but it seems unlikely that that's what they're planning to do after signing him to that extension. But yeah, if you're the Pacers under the old system, you're probably like, all right, it's time for us to really fall back. But now Halliburton comes back and they were in the sixth spot before he got hurt. Maybe he helps him turn around. I don't know. What direction does management want to go? I think ultimately that's what it comes down to, is what's important to your team ownership and the front office. Is it important to get that play-in experience, or is it important to try to maximize your draft pick? And because the lottery odds have been flattened out so much, it's almost like if you're in the lottery, if you can get down and not be the best team that didn't make the playoffs, you can get down into that middle of the pack, you give yourself a pretty decent chance of moving up and getting a guy that can change your franchise. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what some of these teams that are kind of on the bubble, what they end up doing. I just think there's a lot less sellers than there are buyers, and that's going to make for an interesting next week or two as teams try to sort this out and we figure out what the league's going to look like until the buyout, and we see who's going to come available there. Although those guys never make a difference anyway. So
yeah, oh yeah. Well, who is
as we can attest,
who is the big Cavs buyout guy they got?
We've never gotten anybody that's made any real difference. We got Darren Williams 1 year back in the day.
Didn't we get Andrew Bogut? He immediately broke his leg, right?
Yeah. There's not a whole lot to be had out there on the buyout market. There's a reason guys are on the buyout market. How about that? All right, let's leave it there. I think we hit on most of the big storylines that have been going on in the league. So we will be back next week to talk more trades. We will be fast approaching the trade deadline next Tuesday. Hopefully the Cavs will have improved. Cavs got to get it turned around. They need a good win. They need a quality win. It's been few and far between. And then we got to beat the teams that we have to beat. So anyway, on that note, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.